All right, so I'm Dave Shattuck, and I'm in now week two of 3 weeks on the Psalms. As you know, there are 150 Psalms, so we did 50 last week. So that was a joke. All right, so no, we did not do 50 last week, and we will not do 50 this week either. All right, so what are we going to do? We're going to take chapter 3 of C.S. Lewis's book, Reflections on the Psalms, and we're going to focus on that chapter. So, one more time, I'm thinking of these 3 weeks as a teaser to get you to hire me to teach your Sunday school class a full 10 or 12-week session on Reflections on the Psalms by C.S. Lewis. So, this is a promo, and I appreciate having the opportunity to do a commercial for 3 weeks. All right, so a three-week infomercial. Here we go. But before I get started with any of that, we had a question last week. I promised if you asked a question that I would dodge it and then try to answer it this week. Someone asked a question, I dodged it, and I think I have an answer this week. The question was, we have the Psalms, we have the words from the Psalms, we have none of the music from those 150 songs. And someone asked a pretty reasonable question, why haven't we just rewritten the songs so we would be able to sing them now? And a pretty reasonable question. And it turns out there's a pretty reasonable answer, and the answer is, yeah. Pardon me, formally, yes. And it's actually been done several times. Actually, Tommy Coker told me about one of them right at the end last time. I didn't have a chance to share it with you all last week. You can talk with him more about that. I can tell you that I can Google, well, I don't say as well as anybody, but I can Google, and turns out if you do psalter.org, it brings up this lovely website that has lists of and links to various other sites that indeed have all 150 psalms with music. They'll sing them to you. They'll allow you to sing to them. Yes, you can. Yes, we have. Yes, it's been done. Great idea, but whoever asked that question wasn't the first one to have that question. It's been done, and from what I can tell online, it's been done pretty well. So, yes, that's the answer. All right. So that was a question from last week. All right, so let's move forward. Again, I just said this to you orally. Now I'm writing it for you on the screen. We're going to take chapter 3 from C.S. Lewis's book, Reflections on the Psalms. And he named it well. It is not a treatise on the Psalms. Musings on the Psalms, reflections on the Psalms. He's basically going to share with us stream of consciousness in this book, chapter by chapter. You know, this is what occurred to me, he's saying. When I read through the Psalms, this is what came to my mind, and this is what I think about that, and that led me to think about this, and so on. And we're going to follow him along this stream, particularly the stream from chapter 3 today. And I got tired of quoting him by name each time. The first time I did, and then I realized I can just put one statement at the beginning and just save myself a lot of trouble, and I did. Look, anytime you see quotation marks in this presentation, it's C.S. Lewis's Reflections on the Psalms. So, I'll say it one time, and then I won't have to say it again. All right. So, here's the name of that chapter. It's called The Cursings. The Cursings. And, well, I'm going to do a lot of reading aloud today, because it's good practice for me. It helps me learn. I was in the slow reading group when I was in first and second grade. And so it's really comforting for me to be able to read aloud now. And so I'm going to do that some more. My daughter, who teaches in elementary school, says, "They didn't call it that." And the answer is, no, they didn't, but we did. And I was in the slow reading group, and now I get to read aloud, and it's really fun. All right, so this is C.S. Lewis, of course, because there's quotation marks. "In some of the Psalms, the spirit of hatred which strikes us in the face is like the heat from a furnace mouth. Examples can be found all over the Psalter, but perhaps the worst can be found in Psalm 109. And so, let's just read through Psalm 109. And I've got them up here, and I'm going to read to you. It's just easier for me to read than for you. And we're going to have the microphones going around. There's going to be plenty of opportunity for you to talk. But for a while, I'm going to read to you. So here we go. "My God, whom I praise, do not remain silent, for people who are wicked and deceitful have opened their mouths against me. They have spoken against me with lying tongues. With words of hatred they surround me. They attack me without cause. In return for my friendship they accuse me, but I am a man of prayer. They repay me evil for good and hatred for my friendship. Appoint someone evil to oppose my enemy. Let an accuser stand at his right hand. When he is tried, let him be found guilty, and may his prayers condemn him." Listen to that one. Listen to that one. Let me just say that one again. "When he is tried, let him be found guilty, and may his prayers condemn him. May his days be few. May another take his place of leadership." It gets worse. "May his children be fatherless and his wife a widow. May his children be wandering beggars. May they be driven from their ruined homes. May a creditor seize all he has. May strangers plunder the fruits of his labor. May no one extend kindness to him or take pity on his fatherless children." This is a curse. These are curses. This is bad stuff. "May his descendants be cut off, their names blotted out from the next generation. May the iniquity of his fathers be remembered before the Lord. May the sin of his mother never be blotted out." All right? I'm not sure I want to take the blame for what my mom did. That seems kind of mean to me. "May their sins always remain before the Lord, that he may blot out their name from the earth." And this is why. I'm gonna breeze through this part. You've got Psalm 109, I'm sure, somewhere. And he keeps going. And he says, "I am an object of scorn to my accusers. When they see me, they shake their heads. Help me, Lord my God. Save me according to your unfailing love. Let them know that it is your hand, that you, Lord, have done it. While they curse, may you bless. May those who attack me be put to shame. But may your servant rejoice. May my accusers be clothed with disgrace and wrapped in shame as in a cloak. With my mouth, I will greatly extol the Lord. In the great throng of worshipers, I will praise him, for he stands at the right hand of the needy to save their lives from those who would condemn them." All right. I think C.S. Lewis is right. This one's a pretty good example. Cursings doesn't sound very Christian to my ears. And then Psalm 137. Tommy quoted this to us last week, I thought very eloquently, but I'm going to read it this time. But as I do, I want you to remember him talking about it from last week, if you were here. "By the rivers of Babylon, we sat and wept when we remembered Zion." I said I was in the slow reading group, didn't I? Yeah, okay, sorry. "There on the poplars, we hung our harps. For there our captors asked us for songs. Our tormentors demanded songs of joy. They said, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How can we sing the songs of the Lord while in a foreign land? If I forget you, Jerusalem, may my right hand forget its skill. May my tongue cling to the roof of my mouth if I do not remember you, if I do not consider Jerusalem my highest joy. Remember, Lord, what the Edomites did on the day Jerusalem fell. Tear it down, they cried. Tear it down to its foundations. Daughter Babylon, doomed to destruction, happy is the one who repays you according to what you have done to us. Happy is the one who seizes your infants and dashes them against the rocks. Ouch. I think Tommy said it very well last week, and let me reinforce what he said. This is a very moving testament to the feeling that they had when they were taken into captivity and how difficult it was for them to be tormented and how painful that was for them. And it is, it's an eloquent statement of the pain. And then it ends viciously. And according to C.S. Lewis, the worst is the 23rd Psalm. And I first read that, I said, huh? But let's read it. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. But it's verse 5 that jumps out at C.S. Lewis. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. There are some translations that I have read on that that is even more in your face than that. You prepare a feast for me and you make my enemies watch me eat it. C.S. Lewis says, the poet's enjoyment of his present prosperity would not be complete unless those horrid Joneses, do you have any Joneses here? I hope not. The horrid Joneses, who used to look down their noses at him, were watching it all and hating it. Okay, this is a curse. Not quite as bad as the previous one with the babies, but it's particularly difficult here in the middle of this cherished psalm. So, you get to talk next. Got some mic people, I hope, who are ready with microphones. I'm hoping it's going to work better this time. In any case, we're going to hear how C.S. Lewis responds, but I'd like you to get first go. So, how do you deal, and I'm quoting again from C.S. Lewis, with these terrible, or dare we say, contemptible psalms? How do you deal with them? What can you share with us?
I'll just say what I said last week.
Good. I'm glad.
Which is, our God, we know our God, and he forgives us, And he actually encourages honesty from us. And if we can't be honest with God, who can we be honest with? And those people back then wrote it down. If you're going to do this, don't write it down. I mean, yeah, write it down to yourself. And then give your chance to forgive it. And what I'd like to say is I am thankful that God filters my prayers. So when somebody has something against me and says, I'm praying for you, you know, with that tone of voice and that, mm-hmm. I go, thank you. I appreciate it because the God that he and I both love is filtering what he says and what I think about it. And we get that together. So that's how I deal with these really terrible, and it is terrible, but we all have those thoughts to some degree, mm-hmm. just saying. And honesty is good. Just don't broadcast it.
Doesn't mean you have to say it out loud. Right. Good. Anyone else? How do you? Please, here.
Okay. Basically, the same thing. It's better that people are honest. I mean, we have it in psych where we say, you know, people, if they don't express their anger appropriately, it either gets passive aggressive or displaced. And it's just, I enjoy them because it speaks to the deeper gut level feelings that our society says is not good to express, but it is. And then usually, like most, some of the Psalms come back with something praising God. So it's like you get it out your system, and then you switch your attention to Jesus and cling, and you think of his worthiness and graciousness and mercy and love. But it's good to come out first versus displacing it or, you know, passive-aggressive. Sometimes, I was just thinking, sometimes, you know, like when someone's child is murdered on TV, it's just bringing up some ideas. And they go directly into, I forgive them. And personally, I mean, that's me. I have trouble with it.
Yeah. All right. Shut me up, too. David. Me too. No? Please.
If I was carried off to a foreign land away from my family and persecuted, I too would want all kinds of evil to befall my enemies.
Yeah. Yeah. It's real. It's real. Thank you. Here, we got one right up here.
There's Christians today that use these models, and it's called imprecatory prayers, and they actually teach people to pray these prayers in order to bring them back into line with God's will.
Hmm.
Like the Houston's Pastoral Council, the guy who runs that teaches that.
Really? Okay. Okay. Others? Anyone else?
Are you finishing?
No.
Okay. Well,
no.
I wanted to.
Please.
Maybe you will be after I get through.
Please.
All right.
Continue.
Help me, man. Good boy. My name is Dan Yeary. Right now it's Dan Weary. I've just heard, and you've just heard, I'll bet you in the top 5% of the best Sunday school lessons you've ever heard, right or wrong. Raise your hand if I'm right. Okay? That's a majority from what I can see. You guys better have your hands lit. You're in the choir loft. What I've learned at South Main in the past 2 weeks, I've been hobbled. I still am partially. I'm dying. Aren't we all? I'm 80 years old. I've been praying for years, God, let me live to be 100. Because everybody I know between 90 and 100, and I know several. How old are you, Glenn?
88.
Close, okay. This guy helped me create the main point. God gave me the inspiration to name the main point. Chafin, bless his heart, my major professor who I never took a note on, not one. I file everything. I never took a note on chafing because I got it right here because he gave it from here. That's what you call what? Sign language. Sammy Oates, somebody asked me about Sammy Oates, deaf All-American. My coach was Sammy Baugh. I wanted to go to Baylor. The only people that gave me a scholarship was Hardin Simmons. I wanted to go to Baylor, but Lord, I can transfer to Baylor now, et cetera. I got a long story, obviously. I've got to get to the invitation, Glenn. So, Glenn, pull my pant leg when it's time to stop. You going to do that? Okay. Glenn Carver was a single adult over at the Main Point. Glenn Carver, I'm looking around the room now, and I'm seeing several of you. And I'm going to cry because I'm on medication. I'm going to cry. That's time for me to stop. Where was I, Glenn? You were listening, were you? It's because we were at the Main Point. Thank you, Glenn. If you go with me, if we're going to have lunch this weekend, I'm going to get it back together. I'm close, folks. I'm close. I've been so sick ever since Melinda died. I've been half a man. I've been half spiritual, too. I have sinned against my Lord because I've been grinching. You know what grinching is? What is grinching? The Grinch who stole Christmas. Surely, I didn't know you were here. Okay, surely we'll corroborate everything that I'm saying. Everything that I'm saying. Where was I, Glenn? Shirley, okay. That's a good place to be with Shirley. How come you and Shirley never got married? I mean, you guys.
Let me save you, Dan.
Okay. All right. So, you've heard a lot of answers. Let's just hear what C.S. Lewis has to say. He says that one option is just to ignore them. Leave them alone. He says, but unfortunately, the bad parts will not come away clean. They may, as we have noticed, be intertwined with the most exquisite things. All right, so look, I'm not giving up the 23rd Psalm. And I hope you won't either. And C.S. Lewis says, you know, frankly, we can't pull verse 5 out of that. And, he points out, our Lord's mind and language were clearly steeped in the Psalter, and we shall prefer, if possible, to make some use of them. So he's trying to figure out not just a way to look past them, but to use them. So let's see what he's got here. At the outset, I felt sure, and I feel sure still, that we must not either try to explain them away or to yield for one moment to the idea that because it comes in the Bible, all this vindictive hatred must somehow be good and pious. The hatred is there, festering, gloating, undisguised. And also, we should be wicked if we in any way condoned or approved it, or, worse still, used it to justify similar passions in ourselves. Only after these two admissions have been made can we safely proceed. That makes sense to me. These expressions of hatred have turned my attention to the same thing in my own heart. And that, of course, is one very good use we can make of the maledictory psalms. I just love his wording, maledictory psalms. Microsoft says that's not a word. I like that word. I left it in there. Of course, it was his words anyways. But anyways, maledictory psalms. However, something else occurred to me first. So he's saying this is one thing we can do. We can use it to recognize this feeling in ourselves and own it. However, something else occurred to me first. In these psalms, I saw the natural result of injuring a human being. And when I do, I have introduced into his inner life, at best, a new temptation, at worst, a new besetting sin. I was the tempter. Basically, what C.S. Lewis is pointing out here is that these psalms remind us of our own role in leading others to such hatred through our own misdeeds. And so his point is that we can look at these psalms and then think about these psalms and then use them to remind ourselves of the effects of our own actions or misdeeds, not our best actions, but our worst actions, ones that hurt others. And he, because this is a stream of consciousness thing I was telling you about earlier, he turns to a discussion of forgiveness. And I can't really, in the time we have, fully describe to you. I encourage you to read him and read this book in particular. But he's going to talk here about forgiveness. And among his points is that it's not easy. I think we've already heard that once. I want to reinforce it. C.S. Lewis wants to reinforce it. It's not easy. And that it often needs to be repeated many times. I love this quote, so I gave it a direct quote. We need to forgive our brother 70 times 7, not only for 490 offenses, but for one offense. We need to forgive over and over again. Such hatreds are the kind of thing that cruelty and injustice by a sort of natural law produce. This, among other things, is what wrongdoing means. So, C.S. Lewis, somehow, even though he wrote this in 1958, could see into my adult soul and see me forgiving people who had wronged me, and then having to do it over again. He's psychic on top of everything else. Or maybe it happened to him too. I don't know. But I want to turn this back over to you all again. Discussion questions. How do you deal with forgiveness? And this one's a pretty general one, so I'm going to ask two at once and I'll let you pick which one you want to answer. How do you forgive someone more than once? So there's two questions. You can answer either one as you see fit. Our microphones are ready. They seem to be working. Got here. Go ahead.
I was harmed deeply by a person many years ago. And I was thinking about the 490 times. Well, it seems like it's taking me 490 times to forgive that person. So it doesn't seem like my forgiveness is yet complete.
Mm-hmm. I've experienced that. Please.
Thank you, Dr. Shattuck. Did I say it correctly?
You did.
Dad say it twice, you got it.
Okay.
Let me try to keep me on track. My dad walked me down the aisle, took me to Jesus, literally walked me down the aisle. It's a great story. I'll tell you sometime.
Good.
First grade teacher, Daniel John Yeary, stand up in front of the whole class. Are you stupid, kid? I went home crying. Dad said, what's the matter, son? He always put me to bed. We always knelt by the bed and we'd cry and we prayed together. And he taught me the Lord's Prayer. That's all coming back to. I'm just half crazy, okay? My beautiful, wonderful daughter, Missy Girl, and Steve, my pastor, Dr. Stephen Wells, superior intellect, big heart. You know what they did to me? And my son, who got fired by Baylor with Coach Briles. And you know where my son is this morning? He is the single adult minister at Second Baptist Church. I go to two churches every Sunday. I go over there, and I come over here. I Uber over here. And that's a witnessing opportunity. Stop me. No, I got to finish this thought. Where was I, Glenn?
Your son.
My son. And oh, you stupid kid, standing me up a first grader in front of the whole class. My dad's off in Germany. He's not in a concentration camp. He's in a field hospital. We didn't know this till later. He was wounded. I've been trying all week long to find his Purple Heart, but I don't need it. I don't need it because he's got a red one now, royal red, a golden one maybe. Where was I? Okay, Dad, who walked me down the aisle in First Baptist Church, Amarillo, with an eye in the ceiling of the church. That's all this wonderful church needs. I lay there in church, and I look up to a tile like that, and First Baptist Church, Amarillo, which is more like this building than any I've ever been in, I'm sitting in church paying attention, and Billy Sansing's sitting with me. And he knows what I've seen, and he says, "It's God." The top of the church, the architect and the builder and the pastor made an audible call, changed the play. If you go to the First Baptist Church, Amarillo, there's an eye in the top of the church. And Billy Sansing said, "It's God." Rest of the story later.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yep. How about over? Oh, let's.
Yep, go ahead.
Let's go here. There's a microphone.
Dave, the psalm that to me speaks of forgiveness more than any other that I know about is Psalm 51, because of the context in which it is thought that David wrote it. And that's after his disastrous affair with Bathsheba and Nathan coming to him and pointing out to him his wrong. Mm-hmm. And he wrote Psalm 51, we think. And you can just hear the agony in that of regret of what he had done and seeking forgiveness of God. I think Psalm 51 is the one that, to me, that speaks mostly of forgiveness.
Thank you. Very good. Very good. Dan, over here. Go ahead.
It's just from experience, what helped me learn forgiveness the most is getting out of expectations and learning to live in possibilities. Okay. Because expectations, I was unforgiving. And when I'm unforgiving, I get into resentment. When I live in the possibility, I know it could go either way. Because I know people ain't going to do what I want, right?
Yeah.
We all know that.
We all know that.
And but when I'm in the possibility and I can keep forgiving because I don't want the resentment, because the resentment hurts me more than it does somebody else. I mean, it's like drinking poison and expecting the other person to get hurt. That's, you know, but that's that. That helped me a lot. It's a vast different way of looking at life.
Oh, very good. Thank you. Thank you. We had one in the back there in the blue.
I just have a question about forgiving family members. I'm having problems with a family member and my sister, and she just, I'll forgive her. I've asked her to apologize to me, and she says she won't. And it's just ongoing. We have two living parents, and it's just ongoing. And how do you deal with a very close family member that keep stabbing you in your back?
I can't do a complete answer, but let me give you part of an answer. And that is, you don't have to have them apologize to forgive them. It helps. It helps me anyways, but you don't have to. And what I have heard from people who seem pretty wise to me is that I can choose to forgive someone no matter what they do. It's an action I can take. And they don't have to apologize for me to forgive. So that's part of an answer. And maybe others will have more answers as we go around. Go ahead, please.
For me, forgiveness is a process.
Okay.
It's not a one-time thing. I can do it one time, and speaking to this lady's problem with a family, I grew up with an alcoholic mother. I have tried to forgive her. She has passed away because of the alcoholism, so she can't say to me, I'm sorry. I get to a point where I think I've done this, and then all of a sudden, Satan steps back in, and that resentment that Dan was talking about comes back. So I have to start all over again and say, God, change me. You can't change her, but could you change me? Could you change my heart and help me? And it's just not a one-time thing for me.
Good. Thank you. That's a great point. That's a great point. Process. Go ahead.
The thought I had throughout this, other than thinking about the old country song about how I'm praying for you, I'm praying your brakes will go out on a downhill, you know. I don't know why that came to my mind, but...
Sounds like the Psalms to me. Yeah. 151st Psalm. Go ahead.
The process that she was talking about in forgiveness, it seems to me, takes longer because we don't deal with our own part in the problem when we start the forgiveness process. And it may take a while before you're comfortable looking back at what you did that precipitated the issue that you're trying to forgive for somebody else.
That's a great point. Please.
Yeah, I'd like to pile on with that. As a matter of fact, I think that in my own life, and a lot of those Psalms are written as if we know that we've been wronged. That is, there's no question that, you know, that the other person's done something to us. My experience has been that if you'll take time to think about your part in it, it's a two-way street. And a lot of times I get mad before I get anything else. And Christ talked about, you know, turning the other cheek. I think that was to give time to think about, you know, what the facts are. And a lot of forgiveness is really taking enough time to see what the facts are before I decide to be offended. And what I found is that just saying, well, maybe I'm wrong, is a very helpful technique. In starting off that discussion with yourself.
Good. That's a great point. I think that's a great point. Others? Do you forgive and forget? All right. We're beginning to run a little short on time, so I'm going to cut to my answer on this, which I learned from Bill Turner, which is you shouldn't forget. You should forgive, but this forgive and forget thing is not a healthy thing, he said. And I think he was right on that one. I shouldn't forget that I was wronged. I can forgive the person who wronged me. But that doesn't mean I should forget what happened. And this forgive and forget approach can be dangerous for me, in that I can then put myself in a position to get whacked again. And I know that's turn the other cheek, but I think the turn the other cheek is a much deeper thing, as you just alluded to. I don't think we should strive to forget the times we've been wronged. We should strive, and I think process is a really key word in that, over time, over and over again, 490 times or more as needed, we try to forgive. But I think the forgive and forget thing is not the right way to think about this. Please. There's a microphone right behind you.
Behind you.
There you go. Perfect.
I don't think I should forget, because it was Christ who cleansed my heart of the anger that I felt against them. And only He can really forgive and make it possible for me to forgive.
Great point. Thank you. Thank you. Great point.
Well, I learned to forgive for something that people have done to me or to me. But you cannot forget. Here's the reason why.
Okay.
If you forget, you probably will commit the same crime or astral. So you should not forgive. I mean, you should forgive, but you should never forget what that person or that country had done to you. You always have to remember. Remember.
Thank you. Good. Others? Here.
Well, there is some value in forgetting. There was a study done on depression, probably associated with forgiveness, some wrong of some kind, some loss. And what they discovered was that people who have a bad memory have much less depression.
Okay. So I will tell you that as I'm getting older, I forget more and more things all the time. So I should be getting happier. All right. All right. I think we've already talked about this, so I'm going to move forward. C.S. Lewis said in this book, "Then another thought occurred, which led me in an unexpected and at first unwelcome direction. The reaction of the psalmist to injury, though profoundly natural, is profoundly wrong. One may try to excuse it on the ground that they were not Christians and knew no better. But there are two reasons why this defense, though it will go some way, will not go very far. The first is that within Judaism itself, the corrective to this natural reaction already existed." And I've put in the ellipse there not to go through the list, but they're there, and you can probably find them as well, in which he describes how many things in the Old Testament that Jesus repeated, we tend not to have been aware of, were in the Old Testament. I know I wasn't, and apparently he found many other people like me. The second reason is more disquieting. If we are to excuse the poets of the Psalms on the ground that they were not Christians, we ought to be able to point to the same sort of thing and worse in pagan authors. I am not at all sure that I can. So in typical C.S. Lewis fashion, he then delves into, in the book, the relative dangers of temptation and the issue of when we hold ourselves to be higher than others and how we can go wrong in that regard. And there's a lot of really interesting things here. Again, I'd like you to imagine that Linda Brubacher's clever graphic of an ape with his hand on his chin. Just imagine it right there. And we're not going to have enough time to really delve into these discussion questions, so I want you to think about them, and maybe we'll talk about them next week. What about temptation? Do you think Lewis is right about some sins being worse than other sins, and that the higher, the more the danger? We can talk about that sometime, but obviously not today. What in this aspect of a study of the Psalms strikes you as most important? Okay, I'll tell you, I do this with my class when I teach at the University of Houston. I ask them at the end of the class, what was the most important concept that we covered in class today? And it's not because there's a right answer. It's because I want them to think about what we've just been talking about, because if they do think about it, they're more likely to remember it. So I'm asking you to do the same thing here. Think about what you heard and what was really useful to you. Think about it, because then it's easy to remember it. And then, if you have questions, tell you what, come up and see me after we're done here, and I'll evade those questions again, duck out of the way, and maybe by next week I'll have an answer, and we'll go with that.